Hello and welcome to the Chicago Songwriter Podcast, Episode 4. Today we have Matt Stone with us. How you doing, Matt?
I'm doing very well, thank you. How are you doing, Steve?
Very well, thanks. Welcome back from India.
Thank you.
How was your trip?
My trip was long. It was a week-long trip a month ago, and we talked about it a little before. It was very crowded there. A lot of people, a lot of traffic, big need for infrastructure. And on a personal level, the most shocking thing about it was that I was having my house painted. Started when I went away. This is like January 12th. It was still going on 3 days ago, finally finished. So,
oh, wow.
Very happy now.
They do everything on the inside or what?
They did a lot of the inside. And,
yeah.
And, you know, every time it snows, no one can come to the house.
Oh, of course. So you live over in Wrigleyville, is that right?
Mm-hmm, yes.
Yep. So are you a Cubs fan? Is that safe to assume?
That would be unsafe to assume. I like the Cubs. I like the White Sox. I'm originally a Yankee fan. I'm from New York.
Excellent. I'm a Yankee fan myself.
All right.
So,
although I understand that I was just talking to my neighbor, and he said that Ted Lilly just bought the house down the street.
Wow.
So maybe we'll have to camp out in front of his house and get some tickets.
There you go. So you grew up in New York?
Yes, Long Island.
How long have you been in Chicago?
Been in Chicago since 1986.
Yeah. What brought you to Chicago?
I came here to go to business school.
Mm-hmm.
Went to the University of Chicago.
Very
get
nice.
Out in 88 and have been here ever since, except for a one-year stint outside San Francisco.
Okay. Where were you at there?
I was working for a software...
In the Silicon Valley?
Place. No, it was actually in Berkeley.
Okay. Oh, interesting.
So
I'm sure you have a lot of interesting stories from your time at Berkeley, huh?
It's a place where there's a lot of freedom of expression. I remember there was always talk about this guy who would walk around Berkeley streets without, you know, wearing nothing but a pair of sneakers. They called him the naked guy, as I recall.
I've heard of that guy.
Never saw him. But
maybe that was a good thing.
Maybe.
Well, welcome back.
Thank you.
So let's talk a little bit about your songwriting. How long have you been writing songs?
I started writing songs when I was probably 18 and didn't really have any idea. You know, I was in a band, and I used the word band loosely because we only played in my living room and an occasional party. We played a lot of Eagles songs. We called ourselves the Eaglets, which is such an embarrassment that I really shouldn't even say it out loud. But here it is now. It's immortalized for all time. And, you know, started writing some stuff with the guys in the band. First song that I did was, you know, a typical 18-year-old sophomoric treatise on, you know, prostitution or some nonsense like that. And then later, and at the time I only played guitar. I had taken folk guitar lessons as a kid, so it was all Michael Row Your Boat Ashore and that type.
Kumbaya.
Yeah, exactly. And then later I started writing more seriously. I met my wife when we were both in college.
Mm-hmm.
And we were in different colleges, so I started writing songs basically about, you know, being really far away from someone you love and how hard it is.
Yeah.
Which is often much easier to express in a song than it is, you know, actually talking to someone.
Sure. So were these the intended audience for this anyone other than your significant other?
No, I would say not. I mean, and that's probably been the case with almost everything I did for a really long time. I mean, I just wrote because I like to write. I had some background in musical theater type of things in terms of writing and some performing. I've lost my train of thought.
That's okay.
Already.
So we're just talking about who the original audience for your songs.
Right. I'm sorry. So, I originally was just, I was doing a lot of musical theater type of writing. Again, there it was, there was an intended audience that maybe I would write a musical that people saw. And in fact, I did a 10-minute musical at the New Tuners Theater back in like, I don't know, this is like 12 years ago with another guy. It was a collaboration. It was called The Chicken of Wisdom. It was about a church where they worship a rubber chicken. So it was that. But when it comes to, you know, just sort of regular writing, really, I was just writing for myself and for my family until, you know, a couple years ago, for my 40th birthday, my wife gave me some studio time.
Oh, nice.
And, you know, I was just going to go in and make something for myself again, or for her, and then decide, well, you know, if I'm already in the studio, I might as well make it something a little bigger and actually print a few of these things and see if I could sell any of them. And you've got it in your hand.
I'm holding there. Yeah, okay. So when did you make this CD? A couple years ago?
Yeah, it came out, it probably came out 3 years ago now.
Yep.
But I recorded... I recorded three of the songs with a full band, I guess 4 or so years ago when I was turning 40, and then I did another 5 songs just with a piano player later.
Mm-hmm.
And again, you know, go ahead.
Did you know these musicians before you went into the studio, or that you met them in there?
I knew the guy who was my producer, this guy Nicholas Barron, who's mm-hmm. a well-known Chicago guy, and he's. Just got selected as a New York Times emerging artist, so he's a fantastic musician, terrific singer. And these were all his guys who he'd worked with before. The drummer was a guy who had been the drummer for a band called Filter, which had been very big. Steve Gillis, he's a big Chicago drummer. A guy named Sean Summer did the bass playing. He's terrific. Vijay Telesnayak did the piano work, and he's fantastic. So it was really it was the first time I'd ever been in a studio, so that was really exciting.
What was that like? I mean, you show up with your songs and
yeah, you know, when I did the songs with the band, what happened was I would just sort of sit down with it and say, okay, here I'll play it out, and I would play the beginning of something, or I'd play it through, and the drummer and the bass player were there as the rhythm guys, and they said, okay, we got it. And they would come up with something on the spot, and it was, you know, always right on, right what I want. And I mean, it's not like it was the most complicated music in the world necessarily. Although I try, I mean, one of the hallmarks of my stuff, I guess, is that, you know, when I hear popular stuff on the radio, a lot of it is, you know, there's a certain 4-chord progression that. Mm-hmm.
Sure.
Popular songs follow.
That your ear is kind of trained to.
I mean, you know, it's
hear,
coming,
right?
And it's the rock song, pop song,
yeah.
thing.
Well, in the blues, you only have the three,
right? Exactly.
You know? And
I try not to write a lot of songs that are just those basic 4 chords. Although, you know, every time you hear a chorus with those and people do different types of singing around it, you're like, wow, no wonder people use this all the time, because it's so easy.
Yeah,
it seems so easy.
Yeah.
And then, you know, so I sit around like, well, I'm gonna do this totally differently. I don't want to be like those people, the successful popular people.
So when you're writing songs, do you think about the chords and stuff like that, and you deliberately try to come up with some challenging chord progressions or
it depends. Well, for me, when I'm playing, everything is challenging, but it depends on whether I'm playing on guitar or piano. You know, we talked before, you know, I grew up as a guitar player. When I got out of college, maybe when I was 20 or so, I decided I wanted to learn how to play piano.
Okay.
But I didn't actually go take lessons to do that. I just took what I knew from guitar, which was I knew how to play chords.
Right.
So, you know, on piano, that's what I taught myself. So my piano style is very guitar-like in a lot of ways, because my right hand will do all the chords, and my left hand I'll just sort of do like a bass and a fifth and another bass note up higher.
Alrighty. So you learned to play guitar, then you moved into the piano. And which
right,
one
so
do
when
you
I'm
write
writing
more
on piano, on piano it's much easier for me to see the chords as differentiated entities.
Yeah.
So, can I play this for a second?
Yeah, go ahead.
So, I mean, here's like, you know, here's an E minor, right? And if you want to make it a seventh, you just add it up. And if you want to make it a ninth, you can just do that. On guitar, the sevenths, ninths, okay, that's all good. But when you want to go into like, you know, a 13th or something, I don't even know how to do that on guitar. I'm not sure if there are, you know, maybe I need more fingers.
So you're talking about a lot of jazz chords there. Have
so
you studied jazz? Or?
You know, I did a little bit. Okay, so I did a little jazz piano from a guy in Evanston named Alan Swain, who's like a big jazz piano teacher who has his own style, though. It's his own method, the Swain method. And, you know, if you ever run into somebody who's taking them, they know exactly what you're talking about. It's like, okay, yeah, yeah, you know, you learned Fly Me to the Moon in lesson three, and it was a certain, you know, a certain way. I tend to like those chords.
Very lush sounding.
Yeah, and I you know, again, for a long time, you know, it's funny because for a long time I then switched over, having played only guitar for a long time, and then taught myself some piano. Then probably didn't do a lot musically for, you know, years, a few years, 10 years maybe. Bought a piano and started playing piano because I bought this, you know, nice grand piano. I wanted to play it all the time. And, you know, certainly improved. I'll never say I'm any good, but I improved. Improved on piano. And, you know, then a point came where, and this is, you know, just a couple after the CD, because the CD I did is more piano based songs. The guitar came back for me when I decided I wanted to have a better guitar. I was using the same guitar I had when I was 16 years old, and it hurt my fingers. The action was high, it hurt to press, and so I went out and got myself a nicer guitar, and all of a sudden
kind of fell in love with that.
I really fell in love with it.
Yeah.
But on guitar, you know, I find that when you're playing in a regular tuning, that you see the chords. You know, I know where the minors and the sevenths and the ninths. I can figure that out. But then when you do alternate tunings, you know, I'm not somebody who's studied a lot of alternate tunings to know exactly what I'm playing. And we've heard this from other people you've talked to.
Yeah.
And we talk about this in the songwriters group sometimes, where you've got you don't really know exactly what you're playing, but you say, I like that sound, so I'm just going to do that.
So you just kind of move your fingers around until you find something
until
you like.
Until you find something you like.
Yeah.
And for me, that's always been interesting, because when I'm doing those songs, I tend to actually remember how to play them. Whereas with things that I write down on a piece of paper what the chords are, in general, I'm a songwriter, not a song performer. So I don't take the time to learn my own songs. Once I've done it, I've done it. It's like I've had it. It's enough already.
Right.
And then when I want to go, and I've always got it in a book that I can play from there. But the things that I've done that are in alternate tunings, I tend to really know, which is kind of interesting.
You learn them a little bit. Now, do you find that you have a different style song you write at the piano versus the guitar?
Yeah, I think that piano tends to be a little slower for me. You know, guitar, you can strum pretty quickly, right?
Right.
I mean, you can get your hand going up and down
more rhythmic
and fill
rhythm.
Stuff. If you do that same thing on piano, it just sounds silly.
Yeah,
you know,
right.
It's too much.
Absolutely. Would you say that you have a style, or maybe several styles that are unique?
It's hard to say. I think that, you know, people who hear my stuff, you know, will sometimes say, you know, you sound like James Taylor.
I was going to say that. Okay. I think phrasings and vocally.
Right, there are some, which I always think is a wonderful compliment.
I would take it.
I think he's terrific. you know, he's very pure. But, you know, I think I try to do things that are different. I don't know that I have a style. And part of that is because I don't, you know, unlike some of the other people you've had on, I don't listen to a ton of other music. So it's hard for me to figure out where I fit in the scope of other types of music. I mean, certainly I'm a pop folk kind of guy, but with musical theater-ish overtones sometimes. You know, I tend to try to tell stories. Some of the more successful things I've done have been, you know, full-on stories about other people, you know, rather than things that are about myself.
Well, let's hear one.
All right. I'd be happy to.
Which one are you going to play for us first?
I'm going to play a song called Whisper to Me.
Okay. Is there a backstory or anything for this one?
There is a backstory, but I'll play the song and I'll do the backstory. It'll be a real backstory. It'll be a front story then.
That's right.
I don't know. We'll see how it goes.
All right, give it a shot.
Whisper to me what you want me to say, what you want me to do, who you want me to be. I found myself when I followed you down. That's what I say, sometimes that's what I believe. You convince me I'm less than nothing without you. And then you whisper to me, what you want me to say, want me to do, who you want me to be. I turn around wondering if you're there, but it's just the wind. When you're gone, it's as if I don't exist. With each instruction that you give, and then you whisper to me, what you want, me to say, what you want me to do. If this is what you had planned, I'm confused. Does this make me less of a man? I hear your voice, I obey your command. I'm your slave, I always understand when you whisper to me. What you want, me to say? What you want me to do? Yeah, yeah, you whisper to me like you don't give a damn, and you won't let me be. I can hardly remember who I am. Don't wanna hear you whisper. Don't wanna hear you whisper. Whispering to me, stop whispering, stop whispering.
All right, very nice.
Thank you.
Very nice.
Thank you very much.
So what were you thinking about when you wrote that song?
Well, it's in the origination of the song was that there was, I have a friend who couldn't come over to the house. He was busy doing something. Oh wait, that's the other song. I'm sorry. you know, it's about a guy who feels like he's controlled. That, you know, he's always being told what to do and how to do it and who to be. You know, it stems from, I guess a lot of my songs I would describe as intensely personal reflections of a tiny little part of me. You know, I mean, in general, look, I'm You know, so a lot of songs you always hear. I mean, many musicians and songwriters have horrible lives, right? They're unhappy. They're always breaking up and getting back together and everything. And it's, you know, doing drugs or whatever.
Right.
And that is, you know, that's fuel for the creative mill.
Right.
Well, I don't have that. I'm very happy. So what I try to do is take little snippets and then blow them up, you know, out of all proportion. So, you know, I'm sure like most people, you know, you get into a relationship and you feel, you make some compromises and you change somehow.
Yep.
And, you know, the changes are 99% for the good because, you know, we're all, you know, I'm a guy. That means I was, you know, pretty much clueless about how to behave in public until I was, you know, until I was taught properly.
Until your wife taught you how, right?
Exactly. But, you know, I've got another song, for example, called They Don't Talk, that I did it 10 years ago. And basically, you know, the genesis of that one was, you know, a couple lying in bed. They're separated by, you know, 8 inches, and yet it feels like they're, like, you know, it feels like there's a giant gap between them because they've just had a fight, let's say. Right. And I'm sure that's something people can relate to.
Sure.
And I, you know, so I took that little thing and turned it into an entire relationship where the people don't talk, and, you know, they don't talk, they don't walk, they don't do much of anything. Now she feeds the kids, he goes to work, you know, and it's just this horrible thing. So that's sort of a part of a lot of what I do musically is taking these little things and making them still, you know, try to understand the emotion that's inherent in it.
Yep.
Because, you know, as we've talked about in the songwriting group, you know, when you do things that aren't emotionally true, they can sometimes really show as being false.
Yep. That's great that you bring that up, because I've thought about that before, you know, like people like Pink Floyd, who I think were a great band, and then you see the, like, Roger Waters and Syd Barrett and how messed up some of these guys are, and it feels great art, to your point. I mean, you hear The Wall or you hear The Final Cut and you're like, wow, that guy's really going to kill himself. So what do you do if you're a songwriter who isn't on the verge of suicide or trapped in a wall? And that's a neat thing that you've said there, to isolate a little bit and then try to exaggerate it.
And the other thing I'll do is I'll you know, write stories, you know, or I mean, the song I'll do a little later is, you know, it was inspired. I heard something on the radio that I wanted to write a song about. I've got this other song. It's kind of a comedy-ish song about a French professor, science professor named Guillaume Le Gentil, who was trying to discover how far it was from the Earth to the Sun. And, you know, he's got this trip he goes on, and it takes like 9 years, and you know, at the end of it, it's like a horrible debacle. You know, he never discovers what he wants to discover. Other people did, but he didn't, and he comes back to France, and his family has stolen his fortune and declared that he's dead, and, you know, he's got nothing.
Is that a story you made up, or is
no,
that a
that's
true story?
A true story. That's,
okay.
I find I get a lot of ideas from reading Bill Bryson's books.
Okay.
Because he's, you know, he's always got these great stories and
good
all of his travelogues. Yeah.
Now, do you, when you watch movies or TV or read the paper or magazines, are you constantly thinking, okay, maybe here's something I can do, or not so much?
You know, it's if something really strikes me.
Mm-hmm. I know you have one from probably current news events, or
right. I'll do that one. And interestingly, you know, I'm sort of, you know, I'll often hear things on NPR.
Okay.
That will inspire me, because, you know, in general, you know, not to make this too political, but I'm fairly opposed to certain military activities that are going on.
Sure.
And so I like putting that into song and working, you know, working through those feelings that way.
You get some feelings that stir you up enough to motivate you to write a song or do something with them.
Yeah. I recently heard a story about, you know, war widows who are spending their holidays at Arlington Cemetery.
Right.
Okay. Well, that is an interesting...
Some good emotion
something there. And that's, you know, there's a song in there somewhere.
Right. That's great. So let's talk a bit about your songwriting process. So okay. Once you land on an idea, what do you do with it? Do you write at the piano or at the guitar? Do you write away from instruments? Or
I write generally at an instrument. I will have sometimes I'll have an idea about an actual story or plot or something that I want in the song.
Yep.
Sometimes I won't. I will generally come up with the initial riff, and it's not the chorus, but it's the initial riff of the verse. In this one that we just did before, Whisper to Me, where the beginning is. That's all I had.
Yeah.
I was like, okay, well, what can I do with that?
So do you have that music? You have the music before you even had a vocal
that
or a theme?
That time I did.
Okay.
And a lot of times, and I would say at heart, I'm historically more of a music writer than a lyricist.
Okay.
I've worked on the lyrics much more.
Mm-hmm.
In the past, I was probably, if I had lyrics that didn't work, I would, they don't work. So what? I like the tune.
Yeah.
The tune is good. But I like going for, although there's a difference between my piano and my guitar. So the guitar, that's a pretty thing, but that's not a melody
right
there. Whereas on piano, I will often start with playing the melody in my right hand. And I'm always looking on piano for these sort of very lyrical passages that are just, what I'm going for is something that someone listens to and goes, oh my God, that's beautiful.
Yeah.
Now I don't know how often I achieve it or how achievable it is, but that's what I tend to look for on piano.
I found when I was listening to your CD, very melodic, strong melodies coming through there. So I think I think it's working for you.
Thank you.
So then you start with an idea and a little bit of a melody, or you're trying to find the melody.
Yeah, and then I just sort of go until and either I get through to an end, and we'll talk about getting there, or I won't. I have books and loose pages. I'm not the most organized person ever, filled with songs. I probably have over 100, of which, let's rephrase that. I probably have 180 of which half maybe are full done songs completed, and the other half are, a verse. I think that, one of the things that I'm trying to work on now is the structure of the song. I mean, you can do. You go back to the Beatles, they started with choruses half the time.
Sure.
We don't do that so much anymore.
Yep.
Although I did in that song. That was a conscious effort to start with, something, because the Whisper to Me part was the chorus.
Right.
But you've got all your other formats with your AABA, AACD, whatever.
I think in commercial, the chorus is... that's like the king, right? So if you can't get a great chorus that's going to get people singing it,
you're
not going to sell any records.
Absolutely. Yeah, luckily, I'm not on the path of trying to sell a lot of records.
Right.
At this point in my music career.
Right. So you probably write the complete song and not just looking for a catchy chorus to sell a million records.
No, but I want the chorus to be catchy. I want the whole thing to be catchy.
Sure.
I tend to find that the bridge is the most interesting part, the most fun to write, and the hardest to do, because you're looking for something different and you still want it to, I guess I'm always wondering, well, should I take this back into the chorus or back into the verse? How many times do I want to do the chorus? And part of that, I find, is the distinction between songwriting and performing.
Mm-hmm.
Okay? So, I hear we've all heard songs where they might do the chorus at the end 4, 5, 6 times. I mean, it just keeps, but it all, it's, and you sit there going, wow, they're doing that a lot of times. but it sounds good because instrumentally they're doing all kinds of different things and there's a lot of interest. I'm a solo performer with limited skills as an instrumentalist. So if I do the same chorus too many times, I'll bore myself as everyone else.
It's interesting you bring that up. I think maybe is it Winding Down, maybe, or one of the songs on your CD where I think you say it a lot. And I was thinking when I heard it, wow, how great to do that, because I always limit myself and say, well, I'm not going to do it, right? But it really drove home the theme, and it sounded good to me. I was talking to Sue about that when she was in here, and she's not afraid to do some of the la-la-las and fun words like that. And I'm kind of disappointed in myself for not ever being brave enough to do some of that, because it sounds good, and it sounds fun, and it sounds like it fits perfectly in a song. And yet, for some reason, I have this editor in my brain saying, oh, no, don't do that. You know?
Well, it's always very, very interesting. You know, I always I deal with the issue of space.
Uh-huh.
You know, when other people play songs where there's a lot of space, not vocals going on, and they're doing interesting things musically, I'm always so jealous because, again, I don't really have the chops to do that, so I don't bother when I write. You know, when I do it, when I write and do it for myself.
Yeah.
When I have, like, so there are songs on my CD, like the first song has this really great sort of soul piano, gospel-y piano feel, which, you know, which the piano player came up with and we worked together on it. And it's like, you know, when I wrote it, it was, you know, three chords, you know, repeated, you know, eight times. I was like, okay, well, somebody better do something during this. It's not going to be me.
Yeah. Well, I mean, it seems like you've built a good structure, though, that allows them to expand on that. And that's kind of that's the base of a good song.
Right.
That structure is there that allows this other work on top of it.
Right. And I think, yes, that is a strongly held feeling I have, that a song, when you strip out all of the special effects, should be able to stand on its own. I think a lot of songs out there that are really popular can't.
Yeah.
Now, that's fine. It's just not the stuff that I'm going to do right now. Now, when I start, you know, if I move into more computerized stuff, maybe I'll be on their page, right?
Yeah.
I'll be like, forget, who needs it to be a song? I mean, lyrics that people can understand. Who needs that?
Non-repetitive. I mean, you hear some of this, like, house music and...
Right. Which, you know what? I love that stuff, though.
I love it in its setting.
I love almost everything.
Yeah.
You know, but I don't view it as anything akin to what we're doing when we're doing, you know, the songwriting.
I agree.
That we do.
Absolutely. So now you've got your idea. You've got started to take a melody. You know, you talked a little bit before about chords, and you don't like to get trapped into the same old forms.
Mm-hmm.
Is that something you're thinking about at this stage of a song? Like, okay, these three chords, this is just what I expect to hear. So you're testing the boundaries and trying to throw in the jazz chords, or how do you blend that in? Because it seems it's part of your music.
Yeah.
Do you just hear it? Is that what it sounds like in your head when you originally hear it?
Yeah, it's hard to describe. I mean, I just sort of start going and then I see where it takes me. Now, part of it may be that there are, you know, chords that I play. I mean, even though I'm experimenting, there are still certain things that are easier for me to play.
Yeah.
It's a hard thing to know. I mean, I'm not giving you a great answer here.
That's okay.
I just sort of let it flow. And it depends, you know, sometimes, and I've started doing this more, especially on guitar, where I will add things later on.
Okay.
Like, I'll have a song that's kind of done and say, you know what? It's not done. It needs something. The transition from here to here is too abrupt. I didn't say what I wanted to say here. This thing doesn't work. So I would say, initially, I'm changing the way I do things so that I'm more interested in getting through to the end.
Make a first pass
and then being willing to edit.
To come back and edit.
Right.
Yeah. Now, how hard do you push yourself to get through that first pass or to be creative? Do you ever set something aside and try to come back to it? I know you said in your notebook you've got some stuff that's like a verse or something. Will you go back and revisit those, or are those just kind of done?
No, I mean, my goal is to go back and revisit all the ones that are actually worthy.
Yeah.
I mean, I've got plenty of things that, you know, that deep in my heart I know are just not good.
Yeah.
But even so, I find it hard to really abandon mentally anything that I've ever written.
Sure.
To me, it's all like, oh, well, that's not so bad. How bad could that be? Even though, you know, if I've ever played it for anybody, they're like, yeah, that's okay.
Yeah, right.
You know. If people aren't jumping up and down, you kind of know that it's not that great.
Right. What kind of percentage of the stuff that you write do you think is it you put in the keeper pile versus stuff that's okay, or...
I would say that since I started going to the songwriting group, which is maybe a year and a half ago, and I don't go every month, but I would say that it's a much higher percentage than it was, because now, you know, if I'm going to take a song into that group and actually have them critique it, I it better be okay.
You set a higher standard for yourself now at home?
Well, and I finish it, first of all.
Yeah.
You know, so, I mean, it's like, you know, there have been plenty of times where I've walked in to that having, you know, I'm always the one who says, hey, yeah, I got this song. I finished it yesterday. Right? Because I always have something that I finished the day before.
Does going to there
like
motivate
you?
Yeah. Does that motivate you to get it done when you're going?
Because I don't want to go with nothing. I don't like going with old songs necessarily.
Yep.
Because I am less likely to want to change them.
Right.
You know, and because I like there being the song being very fresh. And I'm looking for real opinions.
Sure.
You know, so if I walked in with something for my CD and someone says, oh, you repeated your verse at the end and in the beginning, that's no good. I'm like, well, it's too late. I don't want to hear it now.
Do you think that's always a faux pas? Because I don't mind it, really, sometimes when people repeat in the front and the end.
No, I did it twice in that on that CD.
I think sometimes get closure and wrap up, you know?
It is. I think it's kind of a, I don't know, for me it feels like a 1970s kind of thing. But, I mean, that's when I was growing up. I don't know. I don't do it now too much. I mean, I feel like it's... I agree with you that it can give a sense of closure, but at the same time, it feels a little bit like a cop out. Like, okay, you didn't have anything new to say at the end, so maybe you should have wrapped it up last, you know, a verse earlier.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Well, I go back and forth. I guess I've seen it done pretty effectively, in my opinion, sometimes. Because sometimes it, you know, it starts off saying one thing. Say something else. Say it again, and it has a slightly different meaning because of what came in the middle.
That can certainly be true.
So, I don't think it's an immediate, faux pas. Probably some people would disagree, but certainly the Ramones didn't care. They would say the same thing over and over three or four times in 2 minutes. All right, how about time for another song?
Okay.
What are you going to play for us next?
I'm going to play a song which I guess I call it Scotty, or Scotty was a farmer, or something like that. It's about you'll figure out what it's about as it goes on. Scotty was a farmer. Oh, he loved the land. So he bought himself some acreage that he worked with his own hands. He had a beautiful wife. He had a beautiful life. Scotty was a younger man. He signed on with the guard. Never thought he'd get called up
just thought the money would make life less hard. 9 years they left him alone, and they called on the phone. And now tonight is a night, he must fight in this fight. Go help make the world safe, make everything right. Pack your bags, y'all are leaving today. Kiss your wife, kiss your son, get on your way. Half of your company is already gone. Scotty knows he's leaving home. Scotty knows he's leaving home. Scotty knows he's leaving home, yeah, yeah. Scotty knows he's bullets fly, big desert sky, and you don't know why, you don't know why. 10 months since he left them, now he's a farmer with a gun. He's off defending freedom, he writes letters to his son. Says, I hate this, I hate this. There are so many things I miss. Now he curses his rank as he rides in a tank on a road in the middle of nowhere. Children begging by the side of the road. It's too dangerous to stop, try to lighten their load. His company is already gone. Scotty just wants to go home. Scotty just wants to go home. Scotty just wants to go home, yeah, yeah. Scotty just wants to go home, yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And the bullets fly, big desert sky, and you don't know why, you don't know why. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. Uh-huh. Government so thoughtful, they always bring two men. She sees them standing at the door. Scotty's wife knows it's the end. She starts to fall to her knees. They catch her with practiced ease. She tries to stay calm as their words fall like bombs, blowing up the life that she'll never have now. She gathers her son, feels her strength failing, stands by the stairs, gripping the railing. We know what she's saying. We hear the boy crying. Daddy is not. Is not. Daddy is not. Scotty is not coming home.
All right. Very dramatic ending to that song. Very
yeah.
good.
Yeah. And that's a, I mean, that was an NPR story I heard about a farmer named Scotty who didn't come home.
So he really was a farmer named Scotty.
Really was.
Wow. Have you thought of sending that to his family?
Gosh. I hadn't. It might be
It makes you wonder how they might react to it. I mean,
right? Would they think it was a tribute, or they think it was just so sad?
Yeah. Well, it's certainly very nice. It reminds me a bit of Terry's song "East Ohio." Did you hear that one about the town in Ohio?
Yeah.
Seems like the news has been motivating people to write some stuff lately. So.
Yes.
Well, very nice. Let's shift gears and talk a little bit about some of your influences as a songwriter. This is always one of my favorite parts of the show. But if you were going to create the Matt Stone Songwriter Hall of Fame, and you could put 10 folks in it, who would be, or maybe a few more or less, whatever you got, but who would be your number one inductee, and why?
All right, so... the number one, the Matt Stone Songwriter Hall of Fame. I don't know what name to give him anymore. In the old days, he was Cat Stevens.
Okay.
Now he's Yusuf Islam, or just Yusuf. for me, he was, and again, I wasn't somebody when I was a kid who was listening to a ton of music.
Okay.
So I probably didn't start listening to stuff until I was 16 or 17.
Really?
16 probably when I was playing. And Cat Stevens was the first guy I started listening to.
Mm-hmm.
And it was already, a few years past when he was in his prime.
His heyday.
And I never saw him in concert or anything. He was my first songwriting love. Right? So it's the sweetest.
Your biggest crush. What is it about his music that you really like?
I think his melodies are great. I think his lyrics are very, very deep, very soul-searching,
mm-hmm.
Really spiritual, often very cryptic.
Uh-huh.
I tend not to be particularly cryptic.
Yeah.
I'm very sort of descriptive. So I listen to his stuff. I'm sometimes inspired to try to get less specific in ways, and this goes back into the musical theater stuff. Musical theater, when you're writing for that, they always tell you, be more specific, specific.
Right.
And, in pop and folk, it's like, you don't have to be so, you can just be vague. You can just, say one word and everybody's like, yes, now I know exactly what you mean.
It's interesting you say that, because I tend to be very specific as well, and yet I'm amazed at certain Beatles songs or whatever, where you wonder, you like the song and you wonder, what the heck is this about? What does it mean to be the walrus? Goo goo goo.
Right.
It's great, but I don't know if I would ever get out there. So,
this is an aside, but I was listening to, I was in Whole Foods today and they're playing their 80s mix and they're doing a Phil Collins song. They're doing, I don't know what it's called, Mama, but he's got that part in it where he goes, I'm like, what inspired this guy to put this in the middle of a song? And I mean, it's the goofiest thing. I love it.
Yeah.
But I would never, ever put something like that
in my own song. As a songwriter, it would be hard to get to that, right?
Yeah, I mean, like, how do you decide that you're going to be so out there? That's an aside. I'm sorry.
No, that's great.
All right, so...
Cat Stevens,
Cat
number
Stevens.
One. Yep.
James Taylor.
Okay.
Both old James Taylor, which is what more people are familiar with,
yep,
and his new stuff. I think his new stuff is fantastic. With him, I like that his songs just flow.
Yeah,
they're very seamless, and he writes in a variety of styles.
Mm-hmm.
He's got his sort of steamroller bluesy kind of thing, and then he's got his more folksy style.
You've Got a Friend and Fire and Rain kind of stuff.
Yeah. Did he write You've Got a Friend?
I don't know. That was Carole King, I think.
Yeah.
Sweet Baby James.
Sweet Baby James.
Like, there you go.
But his new stuff is terrific also. Peter Gabriel.
Okay.
Okay, I love Peter Gabriel. I loved him when he was part of Genesis back in the Lamb Lies Down on Broadway days with their, and for, their terrific lyrics. Beautiful songs, great, and he's a drummer originally, I think. So the rhythms, and that's an area where, I'm not a drummer, so rhythmically, it's more challenging for me to come up with things that sound a lot different.
Yep.
And his stuff is always so brilliant, in the way that the, the drum beats are used. Along those same lines, Paul Simon, you know,
very rhythmic,
who became very, very rhythmic, especially in you know, when he did Graceland and things like that. I loved his old stuff. I he's, you know, yeah. I would say I classify, you know, Simon and Bob Dylan, who I don't know a ton of his stuff, but I know that he's fantastic. I mean, I just. You know, I mean, I hear you've heard enough of it,
right?
I mean, you can't avoid it. There's so much of it,
right?
And Bruce Springsteen, who I was not a giant fan of, even though I grew up at the time when everybody was a big Springsteen fan. But those guys are like the, you know, the poets.
Yeah,
I mean, their lyrics are just so terrific. I don't, you know, I could never hope to approach, you know, that level. But that's why I love them.
Yep.
So that may be four or five so far. Peter Himmelman.
Who is that?
Who most people haven't heard of. He happens to be Bob Dylan's son-in-law, but that is not his defining characteristic, because he was writing before that. He's a he's really fascinating. He's an Orthodox Jewish guy from Minnesota, I think, also. Who writes great songs and never really got the popular recognition that he should have gotten. Has lately transformed himself into writing for TV. He was writing for Judging Amy.
Okay.
I don't know if is that still on. But
I don't know.
He's writing for a couple of shows now. Okay. He does children's albums, which are more than children's albums. I got turned on to him. I sort of heard his stuff. He's a really brilliant lyricist, great melodies, but more than anything, he's in concert. He's unbelievable because he's just really personable, and his stories are great. And I remember going to see him once at Shuba's, and it's like it was getting to be closing time at Shuba's, and there's like, I don't know, 60 people. So he says, "Well, does anybody around here have a backyard?" And somebody goes, "Yeah." So, you know, guitar in hand, he takes off down the street playing. We end up in this guy's backyard where they continue the concert for another hour and a half.
Oh my gosh, that's great.
Really, really great. Lennon McCartney.
Okay, good.
So from the Beatles. Although, you know, I think an earlier guest might have mentioned them and talked about how they were so innovative, they were so new, which they certainly were, you know. But at the same time, what I think is so fascinating about them is the way they took the old chord progressions and just changed them, updated them. Because if you look at the chords that if you just sit down and play the chords from a song, a Beatles song, without putting the Beatles around it, they're really the same. I mean, they're chords. They're the same they're the same progressions that people were using 20 years earlier.
Right. Yep.
It's just all of a sudden it's different.
Yeah.
You know, which I think is great.
Great harmonies too.
Oh, fantastic. And you know, they're highlighting that with that Cirque du Soleil
that love show or whatever they have.
They've sort of parsed it all out and taken out the music and I think and Because
they remixed it.
They're doing it for right, but Because like that in Because
I think that's based on like a harmonies Bach or something.
Beautiful.
The harpsichord in that, I think, is based on a chord progression from a Bach piece or something.
Probably, but they took the harpsichord out of it. They're just doing the voices in this Cirque du Soleil show.
Cool.
And it's great. Stephen Sondheim.
Okay.
So there's your musical theater. you know, I mean, you know, fantastic lyricist. I mean, clever. Yeah. You know, can go from comedy to heartfelt songs. You know. He's fantastic. I'll give you one more.
Okay.
Sean Colvin and her writing partner and former romantic partner, John Leventhal.
Okay.
You know, I mean, an album like A Few Small Repairs, you know, comes out, you know, sweeps everything a few years ago. It's just, you know, it's so perfect. Everything, you know, almost every song on that album is absolutely wonderful.
I saw her live once with Jackson Browne. It was really good pairing the two, and it was a great concert.
Jackson Browne's a great songwriter too.
He's not bad. Yeah.
Yeah.
So I'm surprised you don't have any Eagles in there, since they were your original genesis there.
They were, but
and Jackson Browne wrote Yeah. With the Eagles, Take It Easy, or
well, I got other here. The other people who I got Sting.
Okay, great. Sting. Yeah, I think he's very good.
Carla Bonoff, back from that 1970s era. She used to write a lot for Linda Ronstadt.
Okay.
And did some of her own stuff. Things like Someone to Lay Down Beside Me, which is a terrific song. I like I think Lindsey Buckingham.
Oh yeah.
Is great, fantastic guitar player.
Yep.
Billy Joel. Wrote a lot of great stuff.
Yeah, I hear some Billy Joel in some of the piano.
Right.
Unfinished.
Well,
pieces
and
you're
the last three guys I have are like the piano. More piano. Billy Joel, Bruce Hornsby. Who's great. Great pianist, and Joe Jackson from
Stepping Out,
which is I remember listening to that. That was a great. Well, would it be an album back then? Probably.
Yeah,
it was, like 1982.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah. So yeah, I got John Denver too.
Hey,
John Denver. As I not the hippest choice.
Yeah.
But he wrote a lot of beautiful things.
He did. I think "Leave It on a Jet Plane" really touching song.
Yeah, true.
Well, I think we have time for one more.
All right.
I know you want to get into another tuning.
I do want to go into another tuning.
So what tuning are you going to be using?
I'm going to go into Dadgad.
Okay.
And
do you do a lot in alternative tunings?
I do a fair amount now.
Was that difficult at first to start doing that? To make the leap?
Yeah, because I had no idea what I was doing.
Kind of like somebody took all your piano keys and retuned them for you or something. So what do you think you get out of the alternative tunings that you don't get out of the standard ones?
I just write really differently in
kind of breaks up your
these tunings, yeah.
I find sometimes when I write at a piano that I get stuck into certain patterns or things I do, and sometimes on the guitar
right.
too. So does that in a way kind of break you out of those little traps that you may fall into?
I think it can help, yeah. It's always interesting trying to tune to a different tuning, especially because...
Especially when someone's asking you a question.
No, with the... because the capo changes everything.
So what are you going to play for us last year?
The last song I'm going to do is called Can You Forgive Me, Marianne? This is the one that was inspired by the guy who didn't come over because he had something else to do. And I started it as a guy who just can't be bothered.
Yep.
And then it became a little more personal, more about, me and how easy it is for me to be the person who's not the great person in this song, and especially because trying to find the time, for example, to do all the writing, the songwriting, it's not easy with right. other commitments.
That's
so
right.
It was. Does that sound tuned enough for you?
Sounds good.
Don't know how to do it. what a thing that I must do. Can you forgive me, Mary Ann, for not being more than I am? Can you forgive me, Mary Ann? Every night I go to the window. Stare at the boats out on the lake. I wanna dive down in the dark. I wanna dive down in the deep. This is not how it's supposed to be, but this is how it is. Wish I could blame anybody, anybody but me. Can you forgive me, man? Lying in our bed, in another life, I'd stay with you instead. But the world is calling, tired of falling, I'm tired of
Very nice. Is that one of the latest ones you've written?
That is. That's one of the. That's probably my most recent finish, and I added parts, and I like it. I'm very happy with it.
It sounds good. I wouldn't change a thing.
Thank you.
Well, we're just about to the end of our time, so I just wanted to say thanks for coming in, Matt.
Well, thank you for having me. It's been a pleasure.
I hope it's been fun. It's been fun for me, and I hope it's been fun for the listeners, too. So if people would like to get a copy of your CD...
Yes.
Is it available somewhere?
It is still available.
Where can they go to get it?
My garage.
In your garage, okay.
No, they can order it from CD Baby.
Okay.
Where so many of us have our CDs, cdbaby.com/CD/Matt Stone.
Okay.
Or you can just go to CD Baby and search for Matt Stone.
Yep.
You can also find iTunes. You can download on iTunes, 99 cents a song.
So how did you get it onto iTunes? How does that work?
I did my CD publishing through a house called Oasis Publishing, and that was part of their deal, that they get you onto iTunes, which is typically more difficult for the independent musician.
Yeah.
Because you try to do it on your own, and they run you through this process where they listen, and then they say, thanks, but no thanks, because you're not going to sell enough.
Right. Well, that's great. Congratulations on being on those two places.
Thank
I hope people check it out. I've listened to it, and I recommend it. So.
Thank you very much.
All right. Well, thanks again, and till next time, we're signing off.